Hello and welcome back to the F24 podcast. My name is David, and nearly every week of this year since March, I've had creatives come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London, culture and creativity. I started this podcast in 2016, but didn't do anything with it. And then, after a friend of mine and a massive part of the London graffiti culture passed away, Jan Francis, Asset ATG, rest in peace, I thought I can't not do this. I've got to take advantage of being here. I've got to do the things that I want to do as long as they don't inflict on anyone in a negative way. And I thought the culture could do with this, man. I wanted to hear these stories about people. I wanted Jan's story. I've mentioned this before. I didn't get it. So luckily, actually, I got one with Jack Murray, a really good friend of his. We had a really good chat, and it's on the podcast somewhere. Go and check it on the website or, you know, SoundCloud or iTunes, whatever, where we chat about Jan. But basically what I'm saying is I started this because he passed away. I thought, I've got to get this out. And you know what? It's been really overwhelming. The creatives who've been up for coming over and chatting so freely with me, and for you, the listeners, to hear, thousands of you downloading, listening and resonating with our conversations, it's immense. Knowing that our chats are being heard all around the world, it's a real nice feeling. It's calming. And I say that because all the rubbish, the government, the press, the news, all of that they throw at us every single day about our cultures, our ways of life, our religions, about our differences. Sorry, no. We're a lot more similar than they think, or we're being told. Seeing these stats, and I know it's just stats on the SoundCloud app, but seeing them worldwide, it reaffirms my belief that we are just one. We're all the same. And with that in mind, with the honesty from the guests and having these listeners worldwide, we are similar. And we've proved it. So thank you. I have had and I've wanted to have these conversations with people about all this stuff all the time. Why we do what we do, how we keep doing it, the things that happen along the way whilst we're doing it. And my partner being a psychotherapist, me being well into that world, mix that with the effect that my culture's had on my life, a perfect time mix to have these conversations. F24 to me is a necessity. This is the 39th recording, and I'll be 39 New Year's Day as well, so quite a nice way to finish this year. And this week, another London OG, PICWRH. Who's been out there styling on us since 84. I was four then, but you know what I mean. P's a true soldier of the culture, relentless, aggressive with it at times through the last 35 years. Never stopping. I spotted some bits local after he visited. He's not on this side of town much, so he did what he does and done it well. P brings us on a journey from being a publican's kid and growing up in those surroundings, what Camden was like in the 80s and 90s, his first interactions with graffiti, and even before it, where he tells us about how he got the name PIC. We chat about great times running around with WRH squad and his adventures with King Robbo, the amazing friendships he built and a passion for the culture that has never dwindled. We get through loads of other bits also, and I remind him about the first time I met him in 96, which was a real eye-opener to me and what honour and bombing was really about. P's a legend, another superhero, and the truest of gents. Enjoy it. This is F24.
You're welcome.
Cheers for coming over.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm honoured, honestly. Blessed.
Lovely seeing you the other night, man, at the teacher's show.
You too, man. It was good. It was a nice vibe show, wasn't it?
Wicked
it was
turnout.
Like a nice mix of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was decent.
Sick, man. You've done wicked. Yeah, lovely to see.
Pushed the boundaries out a bit, made some fresh stuff as well.
Yeah.
Made you look at things a bit differently.
Yeah. His abstractions of his throw up are just gorgeous.
I really fell in love with the metal stuff because. Obviously, I'm being with metal as well.
All the time, yeah. And so you've got to understand it.
Yeah. All those infills with the...
The enamels on
the enamel style, yeah.
Jeez, that one.
Yes, okay.
And clean as well. Yeah, super really smooth clean, and then really all that dirt clean. Rust on the other side.
Really clean, yeah. Very impressed.
Talented guy, man. Yeah, dope show. Wicked turnout. Mm. Lovely seeing all those people, man.
It was a good mixture, wasn't it? It was old...
Yeah.
Mid school.
Yeah.
New school.
New school.
I was like, what?
Okay. A respectable tag in as well.
Yeah.
Just in one doorway.
Yeah.
Kept it clean. Yeah. I saw them buffing that the other day. And, but no one was pissed. It was just hoardings. So it was perfect. I've got a flip of it. It was nice.
Cool.
Yeah, they've done well. Wicked, David. Well, thank you for coming over. I'm glad we get to have this chat.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm on the back of service. Yeah, everyone's got a story, haven't they? I guess.
Everyone, man.
Yeah. And, these stories, they might die. Do you know what I mean?
This is
if
it.
If someone doesn't document it,
then
you know they get lost forever.
Yeah, and I think they're really fucking important. Your name to me has been a I'm from North London, you know what I mean? I grew up in Kilburn and Camden.
Right.
So your name has been part of my life since I probably started reading Wolves.
Right.
So it's great that I've got a story with it, but to hear the stories is, and same for many other people, man. Like, to hear the person behind it and the reasons why it's a wicked thing. I think it's needed.
Well,
this is real, you know, life-changing events we went through that, you know, forms the rest of our lives in that sense, the life-changing events.
It's your path, isn't it? There's some people take it and they just dabble with a couple of years, and some people go, like, that's a way of life.
Yeah, in many different ways I can bring these tools,
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're definitely dope to be able to chat about this shit. Let's start at the beginning.
Where do you want to start, man?
Right at the beginning.
Start at the beginning.
Where are you from?
The earliest kind of recollection of that for myself.
Where did you grow up? Where were you?
Parents are publicans.
Right.
So when I was really young, we lived out in a place called Broxbourne. And I must have been from the age of 7, so we're talking 77 to about 1980.
Uh-huh.
I was up in Broxbourne.
Right.
Parents of my family were Camden, Kentish Town. Mm-hmm. That's basically my heritage, my roots. But mum and dad decided to get a little house out in Broxbourne. But they were looking after the student union bar in the North London Polytechnic.
Wicked.
So I've got early memories of, you know, sleeping in the cellar, like putting two chairs together, playing bar football in the college of, you know,
wicked.
All these students, that were using that they were studying.
Yeah.
But also, I was going to school up in Broxbourne, and I had a friend of mine who. So my early recollection of actually having some sort of logo was about when I was about 10, so about 1980. He used to have CB radio.
Oh, right, yeah.
So,
of course,
yeah, we used to get on his CB radio, and that was a crack.
What were you chained into?
You could just talk to people, couldn't you?
And get free people,
you just like talk to us, breaker, 1414 for a coffee, all that kind of stuff.
Wicked.
And, so we had kind of a different name for that. And I used my initials at the time. And he used his initials. So weirdly, I had done this little design of my initials. And his was Jason Pipe.
Right.
And he had like a JP kind of initial thing. And I'd done my initials. And I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
But that was my earliest recollection of actually having some sort of
you start these like this like undercover talking type of thing as a 10-year-old, but what do you think led you to drawing out a logo? Like,
I don't know, because it was like me and him together, we just had this little design, and he's done his initials and I've done my initials.
It just made sense,
and it made sense.
Let's have this
it was part of the CD thing. But it wasn't until, so 1980, so I had this little kind of initial thing, which I've still got it written on my school book and stuff.
Wicked.
So that was kind of the earliest experience of graph for me, was having a signature.
Yeah, graph. And more of like a was here.
Yes.
A was here type of feel.
That's right. Yeah. So at that time, obviously there was, it was kind of skinheads were putting it, when I really, really did notice it, because then my parents, they got their, because they were running the student bar.
Yeah.
And then they actually, in 1980, late 80, they then got their own pub.
Right.
In Camden.
Yeah.
And that's when we moved to Camden, like, full time. They sold their house in Broxbourne.
Yeah.
And we moved to Camden. And that was 1980.
Okay. Camden back in them days.
Yeah, and it was, I was going to school around the manor, and I really started to notice just graph. Writing on walls, and it was skinheads that were writing stuff. There was Wilco 2, there was Bozo.
Rolo.
There was Rolo, exactly. And these guys were were up. And I really noticed it. And I even remember that I started doing my little signature thing on walls just to say, like, yeah, I'm part of this.
Okay, yeah.
This thing.
Okay, yeah. I understand.
This was pre B-boy, hip-hop, electro. This was pre all of that. And it was, I'd noticed it. And I was also partaking in it. Just a little dabble.
Just on the way to school, whatever, walking around the manor.
That's right. Yeah. And then I was hanging out on the street a lot more.
What was Camden like back then?
Camden was, I remember Camden, there used to be just about 30 stalls in the Camden Market.
Yeah, in the stables bit.
It was more Dingles.
Canal Touch.
It was a sunken kind of pit thing.
Yeah.
There was all like these stalls. And that was Camden.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Now it's fucking crazy. There's stalls everywhere. Like every little nook and cranny, there's little stables. But at the time, where the Dingles was, it was just little market stalls and they just used to set up, you know, over the weekend.
And the punks on the bridge.
That's right. Used to hang out on the bridge, so just all that, that little area.
Yeah, yeah.
But seeing a lot of graff around, and there was another guy who was very stylish with his tag. He was called Kosh.
Right.
And Kosh, he had this like drop K, and it was a real... It was just a styly kind of way of writing.
So a bit different to the skinheads.
That's right. It was styly. It was more calligraphy kind of style.
Right. He brought a flair to it.
He brought a bit of pizzazz with his name.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, it really stood out.
This Camden as well, yeah.
This was Camden. Yeah. Well, he was, because I was only in that little bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but yeah, I remember seeing it in Camden, thinking, wow, that's
sick.
Really nice.
Yeah,
really nice. And my primary school, I'd actually learned Italic writing. So nice. I could see the flow, like you had this kind of flow.
Yeah,
so
you understand the angle and all that.
Yeah, how you hold it and, you know, you're utilizing the nib properly. So that was very impressionable.
What do you think it was then about just this reading of the streets? Did it go with music? Were you too young to really be getting into a music of sorts?
So the music then for me, I was into the Jam. You know, there was kind of obviously like half, bordering line kind of a mod with a few guys at school that were wearing Stay Pressed trousers and, you know, Ben Sherman shirts, and so it was like being a bit stylish but not really. There was nothing B-boy until 82 come along,
right?
And then I heard Planet Rock and that changed everything for me.
Completely like, different to anything you heard.
Completely. And it was like, wow. Prior to that it was Madness. It was, you know, you're finding your own kind of genres that you're into, or you're into all kind of subcultures.
Mm.
And the skinhead stuff was a little bit too, because I remember skinhead kind of stuff was all a bit, they were sniffing glue or doing gas, you know what I mean? And that was like,
whoa, off their head.
Yeah, whoa, that's there, the nuts. Do you know what I mean? You don't go to certain places down the canal because you know the skinheads would be there. And they'd be sniffing glue. You see all these glue bags everywhere. It was like
gas cans.
Yeah, it was like, whoa, you know, these guys are crazy because they're the older lot, obviously.
They're
16 to 18 kind of age group. And I'm like, you know, 11, 12. So I didn't really get into the real skinhead thing. I was more kind of mod, the Jam, Madness, and until 82.
And then that track. Where did you hear it?
Was
it radio? Was it friends?
I might have. I did used to listen to like radio quite a lot, and just scanning through.
But it just sounded so different.
It was. It was just this whole new genre, and that was my first 12-inch. That's what I went out. So I heard it.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly where I heard it. It probably was the radio. And then I went out and I hunted the record and found it. I still got the 12.
Wicked.
That was my first 12 I bought.
Dope.
And it's like, wow. Because being in a pub, you heard a lot of pop music anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, but I didn't want to stay with pop because I wanted to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And then hearing that, it was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And then going right down the whole electro thing.
Did that click with friends then? As well.
Yeah, so there was a little crew of us that were talking about, this little naughty crew who was like, who got into it as well.
All Camden boys, like this is the Manor World of school.
This is from, I was knocking around, not, there was a few kids from school, actually. Yeah. There was a couple of kids from school, but there was these guys they used to knock about with certain flats. They used to knock around Clarence Way, around that way.
Oh, yeah.
There was always having beef with Queen's Crescent. It's just mental days,
mate. Summer's Town.
Yeah, but no, we had Summer's Town on our side. It was like this, yeah. It was like this little crew of 12 people, and we had beef with Queen's Crescent, right? And Queen's Crescent used to come down and run us silly because it was only 12 of us. And the Crescent had a firm, man. They had a firm noise.
The stakes on both sides of the fucking road, like, oh, man. It's massive.
Like, honestly, people getting stabbed. It was crazy times. Yeah. Like, people say now, like, all this stabbing stuff. And I'm like, actually, it's been a long time.
It's been going on.
A long, long time. Yeah,
we've got a lot more news nowadays. I'm not saying it isn't bad now, but we've got a lot more news than we've ever had. So
absolutely,
a lot more.
Absolutely.
Because yes, it was there.
It was, but it's always been there.
Yeah, yeah.
So my
yeah.
mate Declan, he'd done Bird. Declan was a really good artist as well. And the first wall that we painted, we got a load of car plan from the local car shop up in Kentish Town, and we hit this place called Tarmac. And we, yeah, and he had his own little style going on, and then he got done, he stacked up someone because of the board of fucking
bullshit
madness, yeah. He ended up going down. I met Latchman. I remember going and visiting him in Latchman when I was like 13, 14.
Shit.
So we was finding our way, but we was still being, that was the b-boy thing started coming in then.
To take you away a bit from that.
Yeah, it was like, well, didn't really want to go down that violence route.
Yeah.
And then I ended up even getting stabbed as well. Mm. Had a big fight with one of the Crescent Law and, yeah, it was crazy times. Yeah.
So it was that bit just before you were about to really delve into the culture. It's that crossover where it's basically it's all up for grabs.
And
there was different things for you to pick out. Like, yeah, I'm gonna write on this. Yeah. I'm gonna fight over there. I'm gonna hang with my boys here.
Yeah, but and we was all getting lino out. We was all learning moves.
Right,
we used to go and have battles with people. Yeah, youth club. There was was it Kentish Town Youth Club?
Yeah.
We used to go up there and we'll have battles and stuff. So it's that sort of 83, 84. And then I went to a theatre school. So,
okay.
My homeboy in theatre school, Gary, me and him, we started rapping.
Right.
Together. We started like, yeah, let's do music.
We can do this.
Let's be productive like that. So we started, that was where Partington Crime came from.
That's where the PRC comes from.
That was it. That was Partners in Crime. Me and Gary, we started rapping, MCing together. And me, because I'd already been into the scene a little while anyway, and I started developing hand styles, I felt like that was the whole self-promotion.
Wicked.
Of PIC.
Were you using the school's like equipment to record, or like was it?
No, we ended up through the school, some other kids in school, because it was drama school.
Yeah.
I mean, there were people that had bits of equipment or whatever. So we'd go around and record at some man's house. And then we'd put, I found a tape the other day, man. Oh my God. It's amazing. And I said it to myself, like, for copyright. And I only just opened it, like, I think it was last year. And I was
wicked.
Like, I still got this.
Yes.
You know, because there was this whole thing about copyright thing. And it's like, oh, if you send it to yourself and it's dated, that's like, you don't open it, then that's proof that you have written it.
I did that with Rare Kind.
Right, okay. So, yeah, it's like a basic kind of copyright thing, isn't it? Like, to cover yourself. So
hilarious. That's amazing. Yeah. You found it.
Yeah, I found it. And then I phoned up Gary, because I'm still really good pal.
Wicked.
Gary, my pal. Played it to him down the phone. Stitches, like a real basic beat, Partners in Crime, rocking the place, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Wicked.
So that was what it was, and it was.
So was it music? It was just like, yes.
I was writing because I was writing another name for free, and I was writing. I wrote a couple of names.
So it's a saying that actually. So back, it's about 85 to 86.
Yeah.
By now, and so Graff's hit the streets of London. You're seeing more than Robert Rolo and Wilco and all them guys.
Yeah, they were sort of dying down.
Yeah, and then there was this wave of that came off the back of this music that hit the shores.
That's right. And I started seeing a part of it, and I wanted to. And it was self promotion. That's all it was for me. And I'm like, because I was the man who had the hand style, so I was doing the promotion on that level. So I dropped writing a tag.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I dropped just writing a name, and PIC was the name, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then it got to 85, 86, and I was really getting diving into it. And then I started meeting other writers, because right. I was out there on my own. But Gary was, Gary was a very focused guy. And that's what I love about him. He wanted to get into this show called Starlight Express.
Oh, yeah.
And, he went...
That was a hit, man. That was fucking massive.
He basically, we went up for auditions for it when he was 14.
Wow.
Because he wanted to get in. I didn't get in. Yeah. I wasn't as good as him, but we used to go skating together. We were doing all that, but at the same time, we were still emceeing, and he was learning to skate properly. And when he got to 16, he got in the show.
Wow.
He got in, and it was like, wow, kudos to him. So that's when sort of Parts and Crime stopped.
He had to tune in.
Yeah, and he just focused on that, and he went down that avenue.
Amazing.
And it was like, well, but now within the graph culture,
yeah,
I was becoming a name, which was, well, Pick was becoming a name.
Yeah.
And I just submerged myself into that, and then I'm hooking up with, you know, I met Prime, and then, you know, some...
Where did you meet Prime?
You know what? I can't remember.
Was it like, so,
I can't remember.
Was it just like... The scene back then, because you'd come at it from a bit of a different angle, because it was self-promotion and it wasn't, you know, the conventional story. This was like, I'm going to big up my band. I'm going to get my shit together. We're going to promote ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like meeting people like Prime or Drax or anything like that?
It was amazing because, well, I remember like being, I was traveling a lot because because when I was still at school, I was getting up a lot because Gary lived in a place called Mottingham, which is like Eltham Way.
Right, okay.
And I just used to live at his house. I was just like the next son.
Yeah, basically you were the foster son.
Yeah, from 14. Like, seriously. Yeah. So and a Jamaican family, and then, you know, and they were like, took me in open arms.
Brilliant.
And I was down there all the time. So I was traveling.
Yeah.
Deep south.
Constantly.
And north, constantly, and bombing all the time. And within that, I was getting up like a bit ridiculously.
Yeah.
Really.
Just PIC constantly.
That was it. That was it. And then obviously doing all that travelling, you start seeing other names, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you know, Uni Vans, they were like big down south side.
Yeah.
And then you branch over a little bit, and then you see the Primes, and you see the Devs, and then you see the Crashes, and you're like, whoa, this is... And then, you know, and then you start meeting, I think Cop, ITC, I think Cop was one of the first I met.
Okay.
One of the first writers.
And did he know who you were?
Yeah. It was just...
You were up.
Bombing, bombing. And because it's really weird, I've never actually said even to this day, I don't actually say I'm an artist. Really weird, because I know good artists.
Yeah.
And I always say I'm just a bomber.
You've been a bomber for... Yeah.
And because that was it for me. It was like bombing, And it was about just getting up, just putting it out there. Well, self-promotion, that's what it was. Just seeing, you know, seeing a stamp, putting your stamp out there.
I wonder what the interaction was for like other writers to meet you. You know, when you hear Prime story or Drex's story or Score or something, and the reasons why they write Teach, the reasons why they write, the reasons we get into it.
Mm.
And you probably never spoke about it in 86, 87, 88.
Mm.
About those reasons, you don't. You just, you write. Like, say, would you write?
Yeah.
But it must. I bet they must have thought. What the fuck is this? Yeah, this is a bit different. What he's on.
Yeah.
And why is there dots between his letters? What's he doing?
I know. I was always like, someone said, "Oh, you're Pick." I'm like, "No, I'm PIC," because that was it.
I remember getting corrected as a kid.
Right.
Yeah, saying, "Oh, yeah, that Pick guy." I said, "No, it's not. It's PIC." I'm like, "What are you on about?" No, it's PIC. Get it right.
It's weird. I'm like writing for a crew, and then actually I am.
You are that person.
I know, it's just like,
but in your mind, you're like, it's me and Gal.
Yeah, that was it. And then 86, it went, you know, but I'd already started making a name.
Sweet.
Remember when I got nicked, and it was like trying to explain to my dad
what the fuck you're up to.
Trying to explain to him, and it was like, I was all a bit cocky, and I was like, Dad. You just don't understand.
Yeah.
And he was like, I understand. If you was going out getting a pound, I fucking understand. And then he shook me like a rag doll, honestly, like round the neck. And then threw me up a flight of six stairs. Like,
get up.
Yeah, he's a tough guy, man. He's a big guy. So, yeah, it was because you start getting this kind of, you're getting infamous.
Yeah.
And you're getting a street kudos. And it was real to me. It was more real than. And I started, and actually got out of doing all the acting and all that kind of shit. I actually, when I got to about 16, 17, I said to him, I remember having a conversation with Dad, and he was like, you know, what are you doing? I said, Dad, I don't buy the insincerity of that business.
Yeah.
It's all lovey-lovey, noir, bullshit, fucking talking around behind your back.
Yeah, cold as ice.
Raph was real to me.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm doing something for me.
And this is real
like,
life here.
It was exactly. Yeah, pure, it was no fucking bullshit. It was like, if you could stand on your own and do that, that felt more empowering. Yeah,
you'll get an amazing feeling from that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was the buzz I was trying to explain in my naivety.
And being your age as well. How the fuck do you put those words together?
Absolutely. How can you? Yeah. All I said was, you just don't understand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
just
like, what? you're robbing a bank, you don't understand. It's like, you give it to me, man. I was like, oh, shit. Maybe you're right. So, yeah, that was... So, yeah, it was more real. It was real.
So, did you just... That was it? You were in full time?
And then I was in full time, and then I really hooked up with. Then we came out of the pub in Camden.
Yeah.
And then we went to another pub in Rippersworth. So, and that was 87. And then by that time, I forged an alliance with Robbo, obviously, and Bose, and we worked hard. They was just them two, that crew, and then they invited me into the crew, and I was like, blessed.
Definitely.
So now a crew writing for another crew, which is like, just doesn't make sense, but it made sense to me. I'm like, well, that's beautiful. And then I was hanging out with Prime a lot, so then I scooped him in onto the WRH thing as well, and then Chucky got in, and that was, and then sort of it was close ranks after.
And was this all based up in North West, North?
Well, no, because it was hanging around Robbo's a lot because he had decks and, you know, he was ducking and diving, and so I was hanging out with Prime a lot and Robbo a lot and those a lot, and it was just like we was all mates just doing all the, had the same interests.
Yeah.
So it was all going out partying, going out, you know, graphing and painting trains and shit like that.
Remember
so
your first train?
First train, yes. Yeah, Hainel 84. Yeah, Hainel 84. I went on this guy called, there was a guy at school, Gary Patrick. I still know him now, he's cool. He hooked me up with this DJ over Leighton Stoneway. Where was it? Random ways, anyway. And basically, he was like, oh, yeah, you're big. And I was like, well, yeah, I see, yeah. And he was like, right, okay. I know we were going to paint some trains. I'm like, I'm fucking up for it. Let's go. So, three cans of car plan, and he led me to this little hole in the fence. He said, I'm waiting outside, leave you to it. And I was in there 10, 15 minutes going, wow, like, just putting up loads of toy tags, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was 84.
Lovely, man.
And I'd never, ever got a picture of that, or I never see it ever again. It was one of them, like, one of those mad missions.
Yeah.
In and out, 10, 15 minutes. Loved it.
It's the experience,
like,
man.
It was just on your
own. It's amazing.
All this metal.
Just those 15 minutes, like, and how many years they put into that put onto you for being part of the culture. Just those 15 minutes.
Yeah.
What that added to it all.
Yeah.
If you hadn't have had them 15 minutes, imagine you hadn't painted the train within those first 2 years or 3 years, whatever.
Yeah.
It might be a different story.
Yeah.
Just,
and the maddest thing is, you know, Envy.
Yeah.
He sent me a picture, and it was an old black and white photo of a Central London station, and on the front was one of my hits from that mission. And I've never seen it since.
Wow.
And that was last year, I think, or the year before, and I was like, oh my god.
Was that the old P with the curl and
real dirty kind of
the swerves, the beautiful shapes,
no,
man.
Just very straight,
very
straight, stinky kind of toy-y.
Okay.
And it's like, wow, someone documented it, and I was just like blown away. I was like, oh wow. Not seeing that, and I thought, you know, you just thought it's one of those memories.
Yeah.
You're never ever going to see anything of it. And,
when you had WRH all together, when it all forms together, did you see like a? I mean, obviously by then you see a different part of graffiti, and there's different reasons why you're writing now, and your mates off doing this thing, so you know that Graf Scrap and the PICs about you.
Yeah.
Did you then experience like a whole different side of Graf being with them guys that they...
Yeah, because it was serious. Right. It was fun, but yeah. serious. It yeah. was like, actually, you're stepping up. Because I come from, because I come early from the B-boy thing.
Yeah.
So it was all like battle mode was always, you know, that thing, battling was always yeah. part of the whole genre.
Yeah, every part of this was the ball battle.
Yeah, yeah, battle and style. That's yeah. like, you know, that's the key elements yeah. to B-boyism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I started popping as well, and I was MCing, and I was doing the graph, and,
yeah.
you know, so it was all, it's B-boyism. Yeah. That's what it is. So yeah, you just got you. It's like combining the whole thing. I'd rather have, you know, one really good one tag
yeah.
than 10 shit ones. But now I'm just, I don't give a shit.
What was it like with them guys? Was it?
It was good. No, it was really good actually. We got a lot of shit done together. Partied a lot together.
Mm.
You're your brothers. You know what I mean? You stand by them firm. Do you know what I mean? It's like you forged. An amazing alliance with certain people when I've got the best brothers and friends from that.
Mm.
You know, 30 years later, it's still like, you know, you drop everything for certain people.
Teens to your 20s just molded some amazing years with them.
It's very impressionable time. And yeah, I'm blessed for the journey that I've had.
Yeah. How did it continue after like the main mayhem of WRH and, you know, how the city was getting hit in the late 80s and early 90s? What was the next decision as you hit your mid 20s? What started to happen
for me when it got to I think the fifth time I got nicked?
Wow.
I got done for, what was it? I think it was insides up in Harrowway, excuse me. And yeah, they walked through the carriage, called me to an insights and on big meds. They even took the panel out of the train.
Fuck.
Too cool.
Shit.
Yeah. Banged me to rights, basically. At that time, I got £2,000 fine, 200 hours of community service. Ooh. I'd already done 100 hours before that. I think I had community service two or three times before that. So this was like,
Jesus.
I'm really stretching it out.
You were lucky.
Yeah. No, twice I had community service before that.
Right.
So this was the fifth time, and that was 89. Yeah, 89. Yeah. And then in my infinite wisdom, Gary Forbes.
Yeah.
That's my homeboy, the original Gary Forbes, the original PIC with me. He was doing Starlight in London,
yeah,
at the Apollo Theatre. And then what happened was he got Starlight Express, went to a place called Bochum in Germany, and he was part of the crew for that.
Right.
And he phones me up randomly. I was working at a record shop called Zoo Records in Camden.
Yes. Zoom. Yeah. Upstairs.
Yeah, I was
like,
yeah,
I love Zoom, like, man.
I was in Zoom with employees.
Yeah. I love Zoom.
So I was you know, I was DJing as well now. I was like, you know. So then I got that call and I got that nicking. It's very similar time. And Gary was like, hey, what are you up to? I'm like, well, I'm, you know, I'm DJing, I'm, you know, I'm doing a bit of DJing, I'm working at a record shop, and he was like, come to Germany, man. Come to Germany. There's loads of work out here. And I thought, me and the missus, I said, fancy? She said, yeah. And then we bumped into Germany for a year.
Sick.
It was when just before the Berlin Wall came down. So
wow.
Real crazy time out there as well. And then I started just meeting new people out there. And
where did you live?
The place called Bochum. So I was staying with my mate Gary for a couple of months. And then I got a residency in a little club right there. And ended up staying there for a year.
You got your hustle on,
yeah,
like a DJ and that.
Yeah, just hustled out here, and I got still good brothers.
Amazing.
From German brothers, you know, my brothers out there. So that was it, and I literally just done another runner. I just fucked off another runner. And then, so I sat there for a year, and then I changed my name.
Uh-huh.
I changed my name. I don't want to say what I changed it to, but I changed my name. So when I came back, I started writing another name. because I just thought the heat was too much. And I wasn't sure if, you know, I was wanted or whatever.
When you came back, did you write in Germany? Did you bomb?
Yeah, you did.
So you was, that was staying with you.
No, I was bombing. I was bombing my, PICA in Germany.
When
I came back, I thought I better change it to something else just in case. Because obviously I had heat on me. But yeah, it was after about 8 years of writing the other name.
Wow.
That was it.
Yeah.
Back to who I was. Back to my original.
Did you, that other name, do I know it?
Probably.
Yeah.
More than likely. Yeah. Well, I was at with Robert a bit with it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
We started getting on a mission and doing all main lines coming in and all routes coming into London and going out of London. And we was on a mission. Yeah. See. We was on a mission. So, and that was Robert again. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. So that was another one.
Ah, fucking hell, John.
Bless it, mate. City sausage.
City sausage.
respect to my homeboys, John.
Yeah,
you know.
Always. Mm. The what year was it when you came back from Germany?
That'd be 1991, right then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the mid-90s, I started writing in 95, probably 96.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Okay. So it was 96 and I basically just lived in Camden Pitch that year. All the fucking time.
Oh, right.
Harassing every single person that came in there, getting as much info as I could, painted it as much as I could. But I was smacking everything between as well, Camden and Kilburn and all that. And then one day I walk in there and there's this guy and he's doing an upside down throw up over a dray dub. And I was like, the fuck is that? Oh my God. Sick. Up, fully up with that name. Like, that name was more important to me than PIC was, because obviously that name was my era.
Right.
And I see this thing, you did it perfectly upside down, perfectly. I've got a photo of it.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to see that. I can't even remember to do it.
And then I walked up to you and I said to you, are you? And you were like, no. And I'm like, yeah, you are. You've just done it. Like, no. I was like, you have. He goes, fuck that guy. And you just walked out. And I was like, oh my God, it's him. It's Pick. Fuck. It was sick. And you took out Dre. I can't remember what the reason was. But I just... I'd never seen that before. Like, you did your throw up perfectly upside down. And I just... It was the biggest diss. Because... Yeah, it was just perfectly done upside down. It was more... It was a serious, like... Fall the fuck back. I love Eddie. Dre's a don to me.
I know, and I'll get over it.
Of course, you know, it's a fucking local legend. And whatever happened in 95, 96 with you and him was brilliant. But that first meeting with you was just like blew my mind. And I've never forgotten it. And I've got the photo, and the Dre letters were so sick. Like amazing Dre letters, as usual. Chrome, blue outline. And then you with your black and silver, like you used a bit of his silver, I think you took out his lines and you did your throw up. I was like, that was like fucking amazing.
Naughty.
Amazing. Naughty. But I remember that meeting you were.
Wow.
I remember then, you know, just being that fucking 16-year-old looking out for you in Camden. I saw you outside a couple of pubs every now and then.
Right.
Never came back and said hello to you, but I was always like, yeah, it's that guy. Yeah, sick. I know.
Yeah. I know, because a lot of people, even a few people didn't even know, well, there's still a lot of people don't know.
No.
Yeah,
two.
That's why I don't really want a black bag.
No, it's good. I like that. Yeah. Hey, let's not. Let's not. I'm sorry. We're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
But it was brilliant. And super up. And the places you got with that was sick as well. And for a kid from Kilburn in Camden, very important name, very important, very inspiring.
Mm.
That pushed me to. I actually hit a couple of places in honour of you as well.
Oh, nice.
I was like, he hit that, I've got to get that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
It was that deep.
Yeah, it does, it consumes you really. It's like some people got it in their blood, like a zombie, do you know what I mean? Mm. It's like one of them old, don't stop. Never stop, never will, is, you know, like prime as well, don't stop, never will, you know, fuel, you know, you got these, to certain people, if it gets under your skin, it becomes you, you
that's
know
what I mean,
it consumes you, and that is then part of your identity, that is part of you, and it's like, because obviously you get these fly-by-nights, you know, you see it throughout decades, man. It's like people do a 2 year stint.
Or, yeah. Two, 3 years stint.
Yeah, two, 3 years, and then that's it, and then they're lost in the archives.
And that's fair enough, and you know, and they've gone on to something else.
That's right.
But it's nothing like sticking with something, man. There's nothing like consistency.
I know. And graph with me, it's it's me. It's like I just love it.
I love the way it surpasses age. And that's what I found most interesting in the last, say, 5 years of British graffiti.
Right.
Because I know we've seen, you know, photos of Scene now living in France, you know, in his late 50s or whatever. We see pictures of all these old New Yorkers and that. And not to say that you're all old in this country, but the point being is that we've now surpassed the age. It isn't about being 25 and out there. This is about being a writer. And always being a writer.
Yeah, once it's in your blood, it's in your blood.
Yeah, I was.
For some people.
I went to meet my girlfriend at the train station last night. I live at a Bunkin station. Anyway, I still have my pen with me. And I was walking Brie up and down the platform because the train was late and there was these hoardings up and I had to hit it and I hit it and then I walked the dog down and I walked back up and I was like, yeah, I've just hit the platform and I'm nearly 40, but this is sick, man. I fucking love this shit. Like, and I'm so glad I did it. Like,
I can't stop, man.
You know, it's more than immaturity.
Well, that's what I mean. People look at you and they think, how old are you?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, it's an expression.
It's an expression. It's you know, cool. If you want to stand at your train platform every single day and let it own you, it controls you, it gets you to here and there, and that's it. Cool. I'd rather maybe write my name on it because
I just wanted. I remember early because when we were driving like back and forth with my dad, I remember certain routes he used to go in the car, and I was like, I just want to see my name on that route.
Yeah.
So I would then go off on my little missions and then bomb all these little like the route. So then when I'm sitting with my old man and he's driving, I'd go like, yes, there you go.
Yeah,
and that was me.
It's like signs of life.
Weird mentality, but yeah. It's
signs of life.
It's like, you know, you get bombarded with advertising.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All
exactly.
The time. It's like, well, why can't I fucking have a piece of this?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Fuck you.
I don't want any money. It's cool.
That's right.
Leave me out of the tax bill. Don't worry about that.
That's right.
Let me just write a fucking name.
That's right. You're bombarding me anyway, so why can't I have a bit of it?
Yeah, exactly. Funny times, but as I say, I love it for that because, you know, seeing Drax out in Mexico this month, throw ups galore. Like, you fucking Don. Amazing. I love it. All of this stuff that's going on, these people painting. Score came around here a month ago.
Had an
amazing chat with him, man.
I went to Portugal with Score.
Yeah.
I was honoured.
He's such
a call, and I was like, I'm coming.
Yeah.
I am coming.
Brilliant.
So yeah, with Croc as well. And
brilliant.
Wow, it was just
amazing trips.
Amazing.
We're surpassing something within it, aren't we? Where it is about, I don't know, man. It's more than a misspent youth, is what it is.
It is. It's I don't even know if I can articulate it. To be fair,
yeah.
It's one of the things where you obviously get the adrenaline and the buzz from the whole thing when you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got the, I was there kind of
aspect
afterwards. What is it?
I think it's the feeling of being alive, man.
Well, that's exactly.
I think part of
like saying I was here.
Yeah.
I went to, and where did I go?
Not in an arrogant way.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's not arrogant.
You've still got to be humble with
it.
You've still got to be humble with it. You've got to be careful because a lot of people get fucked up with their ego
and all this kind of
stuff, you know, go down that ego trip kind of thing. So, but if you really, really start analysing it, like, man has been leaving a mark.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
From day dot.
Yeah, this isn't strange.
Exactly.
This isn't strange, don't worry.
The cave drawings and, you know,
Egyptians,
you see
the
hands,
yeah.
And then you're Egypt, you see all, like, everyone's leaving a mark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, we're just doing the same thing, but
it's a very human thing, man. Very human.
I was here and
so we adapt with our tools, the medium we use.
That's
we
right.
adapt. We might use a spray can, you might use a pen, you might use a rock, you might use a sticker.
Mm.
It's all the same shit, man. Mm. Might use a fucking plant and grind it down so you get some colour out of it and then
that's
use
it.
That.
That's
doesn't
right.
It's all the same shit.
It's all just saying that you was here, you know, and it's nice kind of
And ours, I suppose, has just got a bit of a we've got a hip-hop flair, we've got a b-boy flair to the way that we write these things. It's all the fucking same, though.
Exactly. It's leaving a mark.
Yeah.
It's leaving a mark.
What happened in the mid-90s?
Mid-90s...
Because by then, I also knew as well who I'd seen in Camden Pitch was a king, to me, definitely. But I also knew you'd slowed down by that point, especially
with
that.
Well, yeah, got married, had kids.
Oh, right, okay.
So now it was sort of 98, 99, yeah, and then it was all... And I remember I went down there, I think I was doing a lot more stickers then. I was like, because people getting blurred proper, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were going down like hard, they were hitting people hard. Yeah, so
5 years.
Yeah, and I was like, well, this is getting a bit too serious. The trains now were a little bit off, off the scope. But my last train was 96, actually.
Okay.
My last train was 96. We teach, actually.
No, we teach.
Done F, and so yeah, that was the authorities were stamping down on a lot of people, so it was like, you know what, I've swerved going inside, and I really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
None of my family have been inside, actually, so I was like, I don't want to be the first. So I was very conscious of that, so still wanted to get up and do stuff, but it was more a case like the trains were really out of the question now.
And with different responsibilities in your life as well.
Yeah, so like I said, 96 was 96 was the last train, but last still. And then having exactly a responsibility, having a lady, you know, setting up a family. So, but I went down there doing more stickers and doing that kind of thing, really, after that. I just didn't want to be too bait.
Yeah.
I still wanted to sound alive.
Yeah.
So I just found another way of kind of getting my name out there and being a bit more. That's when I started that whole invisible sticker campaign, you know, like, have you seen the pickup stuff?
Yeah, amazing, man, with the sponsored by the Mayor of London.
Yeah. So I went down that road, which was just trying to outsmart the authorities,
really,
because I was doing. I remember having a big battle with Drax, actually, years ago, and it was sticker battle.
Yeah.
And I think that was about sort of 88, I reckon. And me and him had a big sticker battle. I remember even numbering my stickers, like getting up to 2,000, 3,000. I was numbering them all. It's like, it was fucking crazy. But those stickers really didn't last because they were still a tag on a sticker.
Yeah.
And then Solo came out with all his stickers and started on that mission.
Yeah, he's like the sign for movement.
That's right. So then it was like, he was making a wave on that, and you've seen a lot of stuff. It was like, stickers seemed like the a lot easier, but it slaps up.
Yeah.
And not so bait either.
Yeah. Sleight of hand motions and all of that.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, it's only a sticker, what you can do kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then it was like, so you, obviously you're tagging stickers and doing that. But they're still a tag on a sticker.
Yeah.
It's still, and they were still not lasting that long, to be fair.
Well, they were still noticing it was a tag. They want to get it off.
That's right. So then I was like, I need to do something a bit wiser, just be a bit smarter. So that's why I started making them look official, like they were meant to be there.
The dog shitting out spray can.
Pick up your dog poop, pick up your rubbish, pick up yours, which is a good one.
Yeah.
I like that one. Up yours is a good one. So putting two fingers up to authority, basically.
Yeah.
I've got a high-vis vest, and on the back of it, I stenciled street team, and I just go blatant. And I remember one time walking up some road, and I'd wear gloves with the fingers cut off, so I'd clean the lamppost first of all, and then I'd take the sticker off, because you need
you need your fingers to cut the
peel. Your nails to peel the sticker off, and then I'd be putting up these slaps, like one after the other, like uniform, bam, bam, bam. And I remember I'm just doing my thing, like I'm meant to be doing it.
Yeah.
I'm working for the council. That's what it looks like. I'm just in this whole persona. I think that's the acting kind of side came out of me, right? And I remember in my peripheral vision, the old girl just pulled right up beside me. Pulled up, and I carried on.
Yeah.
I just carried on. Just put the slap up.
Yeah.
And then they pulled away, and I thought, yes. I just baffled them. Yes.
Not a flinch.
Yeah. Just carried on. I'm exactly. meant to be doing this. Yeah. I'm getting paid for this.
Yeah. I'm not even going to say even, officers.
Yeah,
you just fuck. I'm working, son.
Yeah,
move on.
Yeah, just crack on. And when that was like that feeling of euphoria coming away from that, thinking, fucking hell, I just got away with it right in front of me.
I can't remember where I was the other day, man, but I saw one with, I saw one that perfectly placed on a lamppost, and it had a cable tie wrapped around the bottom half and the top half, because there was a sign on the other side, on the other side of the lamppost.
Right.
And they obviously thought, oh, we'll line it up with the sticker, because that's obviously government official. Do you know what I mean? And like, I just thought, fucking hell, there's been like a tie in these ones. Yeah, that was an amazing campaign.
Another one was a blinder. I remember in Archway, I was like, I could see one of my stickers. I was like, what the fuck has someone done? It looked like they'd peeled it. And as I'm walking up close to it, I'm thinking, well, what has someone done to it? Because all the edges were raggedy. And I'm thinking, has someone tried to like take it off or something? And when I got up close to it, they repainted the lamppost and painted it around the fucking stickers. And I was like, oh,
you fucking donuts, man.
Gosh. No, I was like, yes,
it's amazing. But you just like, yeah, it's amazing. Because you just have to look at the sticker properly. You've got one thing on each of them.
Spelt wrong.
Yeah, it's spelt wrong. There's nibs in it. There's that. There's always, there's something always. And you're like, how the fuck are you not noticing this? You weird guys.
Amazing.
And that was it. It was like, basically, it was trying to do something where you like background noise, you don't hear it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you just don't even
think. Definitely, I haven't seen one as clever, man. I love sticker bombing. I've loved that in the last few years, definitely. Cause it was
I think Chew, he done a few, didn't he?
Chew done with Chew the campaigns as well, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Where you're like, no smoking, but the Chew in the flag and all that kind of thing. Yeah. So he was on that tip as well.
Clever, subversive, clever stuff, man. Yeah. Wicked way to get up. But just, yours was just, it's just that PIC, just constant. Like, it was so obvious and like, brilliant. I love seeing them. And it was always admiring that they were put up perfectly. Mm. They were never at angles. They weren't like the side slap.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, no.
It had to be official.
Let's get this straight.
There's a uniform going with this. That was it.
Amazing. Little did they fucking know.
I know. So just carried on. And like I say, there's always something in me saying, I want to be out there. I want to, put my name out there.
Yeah. Did you got into music as well?
Yeah, dabbled with the music. So the DJing stuff and obviously coming from the MCing stuff, dabbled in a little bit of that and, made a few little tracks here and there, but nothing ever really popped off. And then you get to that point where it's like, well, now you've got a couple of little babies.
Yeah.
How are you going to make the money? Is the piece and the piece coming in or not? And if they're not, then
something's got to change.
Then I had to take some, other work and, soul destroying stuff like that.
Creativity is
put really aside because you're like, you've got all these responsibilities. And I think that's just a life thing in general.
It has to happen, man.
It does, it does. And it hits people differently. And if, I take that out to people that can make a pound note out of this game, and put a whole family together, or have a partner who's very supportive of that. Because, there's a lot of outside pressures and bills what you're meant to be doing at a certain age.
What society does to us in general, man, and how we're tuned as we grow up. The guilt, I had 18 months of therapy, psychodynamic therapy,
it
was amazing. But the guilt I had going through before that, I couldn't get a studio after I shut my shop, and it didn't work the second shop gallery. I worked from home and I felt guilty I couldn't get a studio because of guilt, and it was so weird, like no one gave me the guilt. It was my idea, but it's how I grew up. It's society.
It's the conforming.
It's the conforming.
It's the way that the society has been conditioned.
Yeah.
So if you're not basically married by 20, you have kids by 30 and a mortgage.
You failed.
What the fuck are you? But the thing is, because we come from the graph cup kind of thing, we're basically putting two things up to society.
Yeah.
We're saying we're non-conformists.
I think that's where the harsh battle comes, though.
Indeed.
I'm sitting in therapy and I'm like, I can't get a studio because of this, and this, but I want a studio because I want to do this, and this. And anyway, I ended up with a studio. But it was, you're restrained so much, you're told so much that no, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. If you continue it, you
you just feel like you're pissing everyone off, or you're doing the wrong thing.
That's right, that's right. Especially if your parents as well.
Parents, like, well, wives, girlfriends, kids.
That's right, that's right. Because the indoctrination is deep.
Oh, yeah, it's deep. Yeah. And then you carry that guilt. I should be doing this because I have brought a seed into the world, and I should this, and this girl's doing this for me, and I should... Yeah, of course you should. I'm not saying you should never. Of course you should step up. I've stepped up for my son. I know you've stepped up for your kids. Of course you should.
Right, yeah.
But happiness and what life is really about, not this fucking conformed
life. Something gets lost though, doesn't it? Because if you are a creative and you're not making money being creative, do you then feel like a sense of you've let people down? And especially because now you've got mouths to feed and you've got rent to pay or rah, rah, rah. It's like you feel like you have to quash this the creative side.
Mate, I try and really sell, yeah. Tough. I try literally try and sell art every single day. And at work, even today, this very day, I'm round with a client about paying for artwork.
Right.
And he doesn't see the point. Right. Basically, he's saying to me, I don't see why I should pay you. I don't want this. I don't see why I should pay you. And it's like, tell that to a fucking plumber after he's put your toilet together. Right. Tell that to the painter and decorator after he's painted your walls white. Never mind about what I did to him or my team. Seriously,
because it's graph as
the
well.
The guy's been ignoring me.
Yeah,
I've left him a voicemail today. All right, Coleman, I'll be at your office tomorrow morning at 9:30. Yeah. And what happens? 20 minutes later, his secretary texts me. Is everything quiet, David? No, he better reply to my email.
Mm.
Like, this is a business. This is this isn't just a lifestyle, mate.
That's right. We're paying
rent. Trying to fucking live.
We're paying rent.
But we're not... poor sod, he literally thinks life's about what he's living.
Mm.
He thinks it's all about the money, and it's all about stepping, and it's all about... Ah, mate, you've conformed way too much. Like, there's a middle ground here.
There is. And I think with writers, because we're going against the grain all the time, aren't we? Because you're basically saying fuck you to the system in a way.
Yeah.
And that's what we all have in common.
Yeah.
That's why I think you really, you know, I've got the most beautiful brothers and sisters from this game.
Definitely.
Because you're on that mindset already.
The understanding, the empathy, the get it.
Totally get
and
it.
And all different backgrounds.
Exactly.
So we're not, there's no familiarity really.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's more unfamiliarity between the people.
But you've got something in common straight away.
Yeah, and it's solid.
Because what
you have to go through to produce that work.
Especially if you have done, you made a bit of a name for yourself as well.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, there's obviously levels you're already tipping on. Where people are like, you know, they tip the hat to you.
It makes you see the world in a different way. I wonder what it was in the 1600s or whatever, or the 1800s, what those people were then, what they were doing, the non-conformists of sorts. Do you know what I mean? I know we've got many different non-conformists in today's society, obviously.
Yeah.
It's not just writers.
Yeah.
There's a million and one.
That's right.
And we know about it now because of, you know, excessive news. But I wonder what... Because there's always been us type of people.
That's true, but have they been written about? And they're the ones who've been documented.
This is it.
Yeah. Which is actually, that's quite interesting, actually.
Because it must be, surely.
Yeah. Well, I know that and my granddad was a non-conformist. He didn't want to go to war and all that, so he jumped off a train.
Fucking hell, to get away from it.
Prison, he jumped off the fucking train.
Late one, I'm out.
He was gone, yeah, he said, I'm out of here, and he jumped off the moving train, and he done a run, and he was hiding in some bombed out building down in, near the Crescent, actually. And my nan, she knew he wasn't going, taking some food.
Amazing.
Because obviously you couldn't come home, because they come straight around the house, and they want to take us to prison. Jesus, they want to go to war.
So there must have been non-conformists constantly.
Yeah. And how'd you hear about them?
Isn't it?
Yeah, right.
We don't get those stories.
We don't.
No.
There must have been people doing all kinds of stuff.
Another good thing, I suppose, about technology, I suppose.
That's true.
Yeah. We have this opportunity.
That's true. Very true.
So, what led you into what you do now?
That was by chance, really. That fell in organically. I remember Gary Forbes, my homeboy.
Wicked G.
His old man had a little garage, and he was restoring cars and fixing cars, and he he restored a TR5. So he's the old man, and I just loved being down the garage, because I was basically living with Gary's family from 14, I guess. So we used to go down the garage a lot, and then I remember it got to 92. I said to Gary, "Hey, Gary, would you fancy having a little project and see if we can make something happen, do some little hustle?" And he's like, "What's that?" I said, "Go halves on a camper van, Volkswagen camper van, and maybe we do it up. And your dad might be able to help us. We might be able to do a turnaround and make a bit of money, a bit of peace."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, all right then." I remember finding this camper van over in Tottenham. I think it was 800 quid, so 400 quid each. It was a bit, rough around the edges. And his old man was like, "Yeah, no problem, boys, bring it down." We brought it down, and then we just got on it, and within like 2-3 week turnaround, we resprayed it, and I was there every day, just learning.
But had you ever done anything like that before?
No, I've never done anything.
So you're just watching.
I've restored like BMXs and that before.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of a kind of
buy for it.
Yeah, a bit of a kind of mechanical mind, I guess. And wanting stuff to make look good, I was doing bits like that, but never like a vehicle. And I actually tell you, I bought and sold a couple of motors with Rocco before as well.
Before that,
that was quite a couple of ventures with him. Just hustling, His Mickey, bless him, Mickey had this little plot on Essex, New North Road, and they had a little car lot, basically. I think there was some derelict land, and they just fucking took it over.
Just moved onto it.
I think it was all they had. It was an old building, so they'd sold the bricks from this old building because they were old stock bricks.
Yeah.
They got about, I don't know, a couple of grand for these old bricks.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then they moved onto this plot of land, squatted it, basically set up an MT car lot, I think it was called. It was called MT Motors.
Yeah.
Mickey and Tony, I think it was, right? MT Motors. And then it was like, "Right, we'll go down the auctions," and John was a hustler. And he was like, "We'll go down the auction," and I was like, "Yeah, I have a bit of that." So I've done a couple of bits for that, and then didn't really earn any money or whatever. But then this idea for this camper van came along, and I thought, well, I wonder if Gary's up for it. And Gary was up for it, so we bought this camper van.
Did you have a thing for campers, or was it just a bit of
I did have a little bit of a thing for him, I guess. Yeah. And it was the whole, you can sleep in this and you can go anywhere in this. It was one of them. So it was like, these are pretty dope.
Yeah.
So we bought a camper in 92. We resprayed it, sorted it out in 2 weeks. A mate of mine, Felix, was having a party. He's born on a leap year, so it was his fifth birthday party or something.
Yeah.
And he had this big field down in a place called Plumpton.
Oh, yeah.
And we took the camper down there, and DIY system was down there. And we stayed for the whole weekend, got spannered, but had this like freshly resprayed camper van. Yes. It was like, what? It was dope. Like, little fire outside, whatever. And then we sold it, made a profit, and didn't do anything else with it.
Yeah.
So I got into the vibe of the VW thing then. And then a bit later on, I was like, you know what, I'm going to get my own one. And then it kept breaking down on me. So I was like, well, I can't afford a mechanic. So I just sort of started dabbling, learning bits and pieces myself. And then a few years later, I hooked up with another guy, and he was into his VWs. And then it was like, and then an opportunity came along, and we got a little workshop together. And that's what I'm doing now, really, just fixing the old VWs.
Is that a better way to be helping the family, like bringing like that real life stuff?
Because for a few years, even when people said, "What do you do for a living?" I sort of shirked it. I was like, "I don't really know. What do I do for a living?" Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was a bit of a weird one. I think that actually, do you know what it is? I've sort of analysed this, and I went to a theatre school, being brought up in a rough area, like I said, there were stabbings, there were fights, there were, we used to throw petrol bombs at people and shit like that.
Camden was fucked up.
It was rough, mate. Yeah. I've seen some madness. I've seen some proper madness. I've seen people getting done proper and all this kind of madness. Anyway, so...
Those two mixes.
So me being like this kind of, you know, thespian, if you like, and then people would say, so what school do you go to? I would never tell them I go to a beer school. I'd say I go to a school at a manor somewhere.
Right? Yeah.
Not your Haverstock or not your William Ennis or whatever. I wouldn't say the local schools because obviously people would know, oh, you don't go there.
You must know.
So I would always like, I would never tell them I go to theatre school because I was like, you know, that would, you'd be classed as a poof. Poof. You're like, what, you're poofed or what?
It was like
that kind of thing. So I was very cautious of that. So, and then later on, because I wasn't really, I didn't have a real solid kind of job or whatever, I would always be a bit cautious when people would, like the second question that comes out of their mouth, like, you know, what's your name? Oh, what do you do for a living? I was always very cautious with, like, are they trying to box me? Like, put me into a box? Or are they analysing me? Are they trying to see what they can get from me? Or is it...
They want to see what box you're in.
That's right. Some people, they're like, oh, so what do you do for a living? Oh, you do that. Oh, all right, see you later.
Yeah. Or don't ask the question at all.
Or don't... Well, that was my thing. I would never ask that question.
Yeah.
Because I felt it doesn't matter actually what you do. It matters as you as being a human being.
If I walk into your place of work, maybe.
Yeah.
But if I meet you in the pub or in the party or...
But I think I've got a bit of stigma from going to theatre school.
Yeah.
I was always like, I didn't really want to be seen as like, you know, a bit of a poof or a bit, you know, a bit lame or a bit weak or whatever. And that was because of the environment, because it was a rough environment. So, and then I took that later on. You know, with people asking, you know, what do you do for a living? And because I didn't really have anything solid, you can't really say, oh, I do a bit of this, do a bit of that. You know, it's like, well, what kind of person? Because people judge you, they do.
That's quite a mad thing to carry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because like, they're exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
One's obviously, what school is it?
Yeah.
And then what work is it?
Yeah, but I took it.
And for these whole years,
For years. Honestly.
It's been the same. Yeah.
Absolutely, for years. And it wasn't until I got real concrete into this, like the you know, fixing Volkswagens kind of scenario, then I'm proud. I'm like, yeah, I fix old Volkswagens. I don't say like, I'm a mechanic, right? I just fix old Volkswagens. Because people do judge.
People judge, but isn't it nuts, though, right? Now, basically, you have to. I know you haven't done that, so you've got an answer for people. But now you've got an answer for people, and they can calm down.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I say it with pride. It's like, oh yeah. So what do you do? And I don't. I still get that little thing in my head thinking, oh, you're analysing me right now. Mm. Or are you trying to put me in a bracket? Mm. You know, you're trying to put me in a box.
What? How much is in my wallet?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Where can you place this?
People do. They, of course. They put you in these kind of, you know, whatever stigma, whatever.
Yeah.
Is attached to that. But I've had that from when I was very young.
That's what I'm thinking. Isn't that?
I've had that from very young. Yeah, yeah. Because I didn't want to be, you know, like seen as being weak.
Mm.
You know, going to a drama school, but I was the naughty kid in drama school. I got expelled once and suspended loads of times.
But you know, if I was watching a silent movie of you and seeing for the first half you being asked what school you're at, I know it's just said silent movie, but anyway.
Don't worry.
But you know what I mean? And then there's that. And then there's the second set of questions, which is what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
And then there's still a silent answer.
You get the same response.
Yes, exactly the same shit.
And it evokes the same emotion for you.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. It gets the same response, yes, but also what it does to you.
You're trying to pigeonhole me.
Yeah. But it's nuts, though, because you lived, you survived all those years, you did whatever, you know, you worked, you hustled.
But in certain circles, that's the second question that comes out of people's mouths.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're networking, which is fair enough, because you might be able to, actually, you do that, let's do some business together.
Of course.
You can do that.
And people think that way, and that's...
Yes, but some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people are like, proper analysing you on a different level, on a different stage.
They want to know what's in that pocket.
That's right.
Are you worthy to be talking to
me? Are you worthy? Yes, right.
Yeah. Or do I need to play up because I need something out of you?
That's right.
People play that game.
I know. I've seen it enough times. So, but yeah, I've had that for many years.
I wonder if that type, those types of questions, and I'm just fucking, I'm not judging anyone, but I wonder if those types of questions come from people who haven't got culture in them. Because coming back to the culture thing, is that I think the fact that we, as I said, we've surpassed age and age has got nothing to do with this culture anymore. But the fact that we get in, it is looked at as a youth culture, it's kids writing on walls, you know, it's a childish act.
Mm.
We get into it, we find this thing that we see the world completely differently. And it really, if you do stay in it for longer than 2-3 years, if you do get past that little drop and it becomes your life and it becomes part of it, the knock-on effect to other things in life is amazing. Mm. I've been doing this now. I've been self-employed for 17 years. I still don't know. Don't know what to call myself.
Right.
I don't know what my title is.
Right.
And I write.
Just a creative brother.
Mate, I'm a creative guy. But yeah.
Creative brother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's.
And then that can be anything, can't it? Because you're just creative.
Yeah, yeah. But I get the same thing as you. So what is it you do? Like,
See, I would never say I was an artist, I'd just say I'm a creative.
Well, but do you know what does it for people? It's when I sell them 17 years.
Mm.
Stop counting my money. Stop wondering what I do. I've just said 17 years.
Yeah.
Like, there's too much to talk about.
Do you know
what I mean? Let's move on now.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't
want that just me as a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, are you a decent person?
That's it.
What do you do for your spare time?
What do you think? Isn't your dog lovely?
That's it.
All of that. Come on, let's be human.
That's right.
Fuck
people do get mixed up and people, people.
And not to say that everyone, I don't need to be rude to people that ask a question, of course you can ask a question. I obviously ask the question, we do it. But the judgment that comes behind it is the problem.
Right. That's right, because they're trying to figure you out.
Yeah.
Like, okay, because, all right, you might look like you're wearing a million fucking pound suit or whatever, and they're thinking, how the fuck are you getting your money?
Are
you a drug dealer?
Exactly. Because you don't look like one of us.
That's it.
Why do you look good?
That's right.
How come you look smart, I don't know you.
That's right. So, but it's not until I started this Volkswagen stuff, then I was like, you know what? I'm actually proud of saying, I'll do that.
It's like, you're still fully PIC, but now with a society's like,
Approval.
Tick box tick. Next to it.
Oh,
who's that? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
All those years, P, we didn't know.
Yeah, I know.
PIC that. All right.
I've been a stigma for quite some time.
I bet, man. But I think, you know, if you hadn't have had that stigma and if you hadn't had that slight drive in you, it wouldn't have been the inquisitive nature of, I'm actually going to look into camper vans.
Mm.
I'm not just going to go and find a Ford and flip it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, and that's cool, and I'm not going to do up this.
There's some interest
got to be involved in this.
Yeah, no, I really started getting into it. So I've done a welding course, and then.
Wicked.
That was it. I've never done a mechanics course or anything.
But you've got your head around
just
it.
Just been getting my head around it and learning every day. And that's what I do love about it. It's like, you know, constant like feeding. Growing knowledge, it's like, oh yeah, right, and then, oh, and then I fixed it, blinding.
And there's a whole world there as well.
Yeah, it's a mad scene. It's a mad scene. It's gone a bit quiet now, actually.
Has it? Yeah, it has.
I think there's.
Is that people's fears in other parts of the world?
I think there's a lot of that going on. I spoke to my supplier the other day. And a lot of companies are saying the same thing. There's like just not much work. Either people are holding on to their readies because of the uncertainty of certain things that's going on at the moment, or people have sold their classics. Cashed them
in order to keep up with what's going on.
Right. So and then you know, and my spot that I've got. I'm going to be honest here. It's a little backstreet garage.
It's lovely though, man.
But it's just a little backstreet garage. I haven't got a lift in there. Do you know what I mean? I can't, you know, four poster ramp or whatever. I'm not got any of that. I'm still jacking up cars on my hands and knees. So I can only cater for a certain amount of stuff anyway.
Mate, when I saw that room, man, that space, I loved it. When I came looking for you, I got lost and you called me. It was a couple of years ago. Right. You alright? And I'm like, yeah, I'm nearly there, I think. And I think I was probably another 20 minutes away.
Right.
But I found this place and I loved it because it reminded me of proper work in London.
Yeah, just an old back street.
Oh man.
Back street hustle.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Little cobblestone views.
Loved it, man.
Yeah, no, I love the little spot. But it's getting to that point, it's like, well, there's not much work coming in, so now I'm going to have to, I'm thinking of a lot of stuff to do now.
Yeah.
I want to get creative again, basically.
Wicked.
So I want to do something with that. Just for me, really. Maybe yeah. More stuff out of metal, doing sculptures and that kind of shit, which I'm on for that show with John and whatever.
So, I think, you know, another thing about, it's great that we're talking, everyone's talking now, we're talking a lot more. I've been doing this nearly a year now.
Wicked.
It chats up over 40 conversations now.
Blimey, good for you, man.
And it's due to the other conversations I have out there and the other conversations you hear about. And, you know, like watching Nima go off to university
right.
and go and get a degree, watching Petro, watching Elk,
right.
watching Drax travel.
Right.
All these things, and you're like, yeah, this doesn't stop.
Mm.
Doesn't matter what age I am.
It's true.
Really That's doesn't it. Matter. Chatting to Teach made me think, and I'm not going to do it. But it made me realise, and not that he still does it, but it made me realise I could still paint illegally.
Mm.
There's nothing stopping me. I stopped painting illegally because of society, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Still dabbing a little bit, but I stopped the painting illegally. And, yeah. you know, you've got your son, you've got your business, you've got your girlfriend, yeah, wife, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, hang on. Life's a lot freer than they're telling us, man. Like, yeah, and I can change and switch adapt and move, all of that. Turn your phone off.
That's it. Switch it all off.
Yeah. But just, you know... Not being scared of the next... Seeing, especially those three, go back to uni and go and get their degrees, I find it so inspiring. I don't want to go to uni, but I just think they made a decision.
They wanted some more tools in the bag.
And they were coming up to 40 or were 40 plus, yeah. and it's like, brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah this doesn't stop.
Yeah,
like, you can change.
It's quite a place to grow, isn't it? It's a growing process.
And you let yourself. Let yourself and don't be scared of it.
That's right. Embrace it, because if that's your calling, that's... Just go with it.
We'll survive as well, man.
Yeah, exactly.
There's definitely survive.
Some of the time, the right positive attitude.
Of course.
You know,
I'm not in that hippy-dippy way. It's not that.
No.
But just be positive, seriously, because
right.
it really does work.
It does.
You know, consistency and some positivity behind an idea, man. It finds its
way. Manifestation.
All of that shit. All of that shit, man. Yeah. It's, and it, you know, we learned that. Right at the beginning when we fucking saw a metal train and we were like, there's a fence and a window and a this and that in front of it, but I know that's possible, I'm going to go and get that.
And that's what I mean. So throughout the 2000s and that, when you see people still doing trains or whatever, I was like, go on, because I knew that I just couldn't go to prison and I couldn't do that. We had a small young family and all that.
It's like,
I had to back out on that.
I still
wanted to get up in my way.
Yeah.
I still want to be out there like I'm alive still and leave your mark.
Yes,
there's
different ways to do it.
Like, yeah, there's another. Yeah, so that's it. It's just like thinking another way. And then obviously when ATG and that lot came along, and then they started doing all the roof rocks and
full color track size, and you're like,
yes,
waves.
The next level. You're like, wicked. It's like,
hey, what's going on out there now?
Yeah,
fucking minute runners are ridiculous.
Popping off.
Absolutely gorgeous.
I don't know how long it's going to last, but this is a boom.
This is the thing, man. It's a fucking 30 years we've had it here now.
Mm.
We've had a wave every, say, 4 years.
Mm.
4 to 6 years. For the last 30 years, we've had these amazing waves. And obviously, some have been heavier than others.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. And it's always new. New people.
It's good to see.
Yeah. And then but what it does, it enables you to think... Yeah, I'm not going to go out there and do that, but it's inspiring enough for me to think like this.
Yeah.
I mean, still think like this,
that's
still
right.
think out of the box, still
that's right.
aspire
to the case.
No, exactly.
I love it when it's cold, man, because you can legitimately cover your face up. It's like,
almost bad an eye.
Yeah, in the summer.
On that, like, you got fucking mutter, get rushed.
I come out in the cold,
exactly.
man.
Fucking hell. Well, P, man, that was...
Oh, blessings. Well, thank you for...
I loved it.
Yeah, thank you for just... I'm honoured, you know, for the invitation and just say my little bit. And if it makes, you know, someone's day happy, I don't know. I'm just honoured. Thank you very much.
Mate, you know, as I said, man, 16 and watching you do that,
I want to see that photo.
I've got that. I've got a black and white version of it. I'll pull it up.
No way. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's intrigued. Yeah, your name, the other name, and then when I, because PIC became legendary to me after the fact. I learned the legend of PIC.
Oh, right.
And I didn't put the two together either for a while.
Okay.
Took a hot minute.
Okay.
It wasn't like a couple of months. It was a while before it was like, what? No.
Connection.
That fucking time meeting you though, man, and what your name had already done to me in those, you know, the years of my run up to graffiti and then being a writer, starting to be a writer, and obviously coming from that area. Amazing. I love knowing you. It's wicked. It's one of them ones.
Bless.
Thank you, brother.
Bless you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. I'm honoured.
WRH, man. Wow. Rest in peace, Robbo, mate. We'll never forget you, son. We rock hard.
It's alive.
Isn't it?
Well, we got another one. I hope you enjoyed it. I love this shit, man. It's dope. Humanising heroes. Not in a get off that plinth way, just in a humanising, in a way that we can relate and resonate. We're all the fucking same. I said it earlier. Just to tell you what, some people are a bit more brave when it comes to hitting them streets. But still, great hearing P's story. Love the old Camden talk and the dodgy motor spots and the daily hustles and the knowing that being creative can work alongside all of that. Getting his head around camper vans and knowing art's always around the corner. Amazing, man. Remember I did an art print for him of his stickers. I love them stickers. Some of the smartest sticker bombing I've ever seen. I'm really intrigued with what he'll do art-wise next. And I know he's handy with some steel and a blowtorch, so just keep your eyes peeled. Look out for them stickers too. London Classics. PIC. Another member of our art gang. And art wins. We win. We love this shit. A great end of year, and thanks for listening. You know, these 39 recordings, 30,000 fucking listens, man. All out of this studio in Acton. I've got a few issues with technology. But you know what? This is some type of freedom and expression, man. Tech is doing it for us. But just don't let it own you. Anyway, love your city and love your culture. And we'll always remember and we'll always big up King Robbo, Jan Asset, George Haight, Rizzo, Mood, Paws, Court, Veko, Snuck, Lover, K-Bag, Trip, and all the other soldiers we've lost. It's been a hard year, we won't forget. Today, actually, I went out and touched up that Asset piece down near Ladbrokes Grove Station. It's been rocking for a year. Proud to say it hasn't been touched. Just brought it to life a bit more. Anyway, enjoy. This is F24. Happy New Year.